You are listening to Fanther Tracks.
Because of the following special program, Wonder Woman and the Incredible Hulk will not be presented this evening.
Time to get all your Star Wars news in a single file. This is Making Tracks. Here are your hosts, Mark Newbold and Mark Wolcaster.
That's not true. That's impossible.
You're listening to episode 65 of Making Tracks. I'm your co-host, Mark Newbold, and joining me today is a man who, if he got into a water fight and he had to grab a big water gun, he would grab a Super Ahsoka. How are you, Mark?
I'm good, man. I'm very well. How are you? How's your week in Star Wars been?
My week in Star Wars, it's been, well, I mean, this is no surprise to anybody who listens to the show. It's been really, really busy. Yeah. Because obviously we had episode 12 last week and episode 13 this week, chapter 13, which we'll talk about shortly. Loads of announcements have happened. All good news, casting rumours and all sorts of malarkey. But we can't start the show really without mentioning the sad news. Dave Prowse passed away this weekend. I just want to grab your thoughts quickly, Mark, before we move on. Being a member of the Rebel Legion and of the UKG as well. Obviously, Dave was important to both in different ways. Any thoughts or memories of the big guy?
I met him, you know, a few times over the last 10 years or so, and he's always been really nice and chirpy and chatty at times at conventions and stuff. And we spoke a lot about bodybuilding and stuff like that, more than Star Wars, believe it or not. Karen, my girlfriend, she was one of the members of the UKG who inducted Dave into the 501st as an honorary member. And actually, I believe 1 year, and this is before me and her were dating, but 1 year at Leicester National Space Centre, Dave Prowse actually babysat her two sons for the evening whilst she and everybody else went out for a bit of an ease up. So that was kind of cool. So she does often remind the boys that they have been babysat by Darth Vader in the past, and so should be on the best behaviour.
Very true. Yeah, I interviewed him. It was my second big interview on Lightsaber back in the day, back in 2000. So okay. Always grateful. And similar to you, we didn't talk about bodybuilding, although it would have been a great topic because obviously he trained Christopher Reeve to be Superman and did all sorts of cool stuff as the Green Cross Code Man, as we know. But I spoke to him about his appearances on Tiswas, which was the big Saturday morning kids show back in the 70s here, mostly Midlands based where I am, and he used to appear on that a lot. So we had a bit of a joke about that, who would win in a fight between Darth Vader and the Phantom Flanflinger, and he didn't have an answer because he thought it was the daftest question ever. But terribly sad. He was 85. He'd struggled being like we say a big guy. He'd had hip operations and other stuff, so he'd struggled a bit with his physical health over the years. But he retired from conventions back in 2017, did a big Empire Day event. Terribly sad, another member of the original trilogy that's passed. So obviously Fanther Tracks and Making Tracks want to send our deepest condolences to his friends and family and all the people that know him.
Hello, I'm Warwick Davis and you're listening to Fanther Tracks.
So really good news came through middle of last week that Disney Gallery, The Mandalorian, will be returning on the 25th of December for more, another insight into the behind-the-scenes makings of the show. Now, they haven't said or confirmed whether or not it is a one-off episode or it's a miniseries or I think it was an eight-parter before. They've not said what length this second go at the Disney Gallery is, but nevertheless, whatever we get is more than we probably expected. Fantastic news, isn't it, given that you can kind of already see the advancements in stagecraft on season two?
Oh yeah, it's wonderful news. And unfortunately, I did break it to the girlfriend that don't think that we're going to be doing too much on Christmas before I've had a chance to watch the first episode of The Gallery. I'd like to think it's going to be another series, but there's a slightly practical side of me that thinks, I wonder if there's enough new material, you know, enough big advances to really warrant having like another eight episode series, or if maybe they just do like an hour or 90 minute kind of almost feature just to kind of do an update as such. Most of us will be familiar with the volume and stagecraft technology. Obviously, there's been enhancements, but they were pretty good in respect of they kind of went into a modicum amount of detail, but perhaps like those advances will probably be more under the hood improvements, which may not necessarily be to everybody's tastes and likings. It might be a little bit techie for some people, so who knows? But I think it's great. I mean, and it's always great great to have any kind of insight into how they make the sausage, really. I think it's it's always interesting because it's, you know, I mean, we had those really great moments with Dave Filoni in the last season where he kind of really laid out his thoughts, and clearly thoughts that he had probably had bubbling around our head for, like, you know, many years. And to actually kind of get him to kind of like open up about some stuff was great. And also, again, you know, if they're able to do those kind of roundtables, that will be the interesting thing, because obviously the world being what it is these days, will it be maybe more kind of one-to-one interviews and, you know, they kind of bolt them all together, or do they do some kind of Zoom chat or something? Because I don't know if they're going to have like social distancing capabilities to get everybody in a room.
My head tells me that we're still three episodes away from the end of season two, and the massive advances in specifically stagecraft just blew us all away last season. And now we've got a bit more of a seasoned eye. We've watched Disney Gallery. We've picked up on articles. ILMers online have given us a bit of detail. But I still think that something new is going to come in the next three episodes. And especially, and we're getting to chapter 13 shortly, especially as we're heading towards a specific location with a mission to bring other characters into the show. Who could that be? You know, you keep hearing rumors that ILM are working on various techniques to show younger versions of certain characters. And now we're on television. It's, you know, is it doable on television? Have they just landed on the ultimate way of doing whatever it might be, whoever it might be? You know what I'm getting at? I just feel there's a massive advancement coming in that Disney Gallery that we'll watch the episode and go, come on, how the hell have they done that? You know, and then Disney Gallery will go, well, this is the technique and this is what it is and this is how we did it, sort of thing. So my head tells me that. I'm just curious, though, whether or not it will be eight. I think it was eight, wasn't it, before? Eight episodes of Disney Gallery? Or was it?
I think it was eight. Yeah, I think you are right. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, because obviously they spoke to the cast, they spoke to the directors, they spoke, you know, they went through all the departments. And like you say, I think to do that again might be slightly redundant unless they've done something just bonkers, insane, next level. And my head just tells me that there's something really crazy coming up in before the end of the season, beyond storyline. Something technical.
Let's hope there is. I mean, I suppose also there is that big thing at the moment, and, you know, we've seen something that's been very evident in chapter 13 and chapter 12 and most of the second season, is this joining up and kind of linking of expanded universe elements. Maybe they might want to go into that, because they did do that one episode, I think it might have been the last episode, where they kind of went through and kind of spoke a lot about some of these deep cuts, as Jon Favreau likes to call them. Maybe something like that could be an episode, and it'd be interesting also to see how Ludwig Göransson has actually developed the score for the second season of Mandalorian, because obviously the score has to have its own kind of journey. So I'm sure there's going to be lots of talking points to have, so I can't wait for it. And I think my presence can wait until I've seen it, I think, this year.
Turkey, schmurky, who cares? we've got more Disney Gallery and the Mandalorian coming on Christmas Day. Can't wait.
I'm Anthony Daniels, and you are listening to Fantha Tracks. Well done.
So it's no surprise and no secret, and goodness knows nobody held back on spoilers. Chapter 13, The Jedi, from season 2 of The Mandalorian, landed on Friday, 8 o'clock for us here in the UK, a little bit earlier, in the middle of the night for people in the States and around the world. Just, I'm struggling to find the words to describe it succinctly. I don't think there's any real way. We saw a live-action Ahsoka Tano, and it was realised fantastically well by Rosario Dawson, which I think everybody knew that was coming. There was no big surprises there. First impressions, what do you think? Did this episode knock your socks off like it did most other people?
Yeah, it kind of blew my socks off in a slightly understated kind of way. It wasn't the big kind of set pieces that we kind of almost got with the previous episode, chapter 12. But this one very much had a real good focus on really the child, on Baby Yoda / Grogu, whatever you want to call him. So yeah, and I was pleasantly surprised that, you know, Ahsoka jumped right into the action right at the top of the episode, which I thought was a really good thing to do, because it meant that there was no kind of build-up. And I think sometimes build-up can be a little bit disappointing, or sometimes lost on those who don't necessarily know the character. I mean, we as Star Wars fans knew who Ahsoka Tano is. More casual Star Wars fans who haven't seen Clone Wars and Rebels may be familiar, or at least au fait with the name, but not necessarily may have seen her. So therefore, to kind of build up a whole episode just to get her reveal may not have landed quite so well. So I was pleasantly surprised that she was right in from the beginning. She got down and dirty with those henchmen and just kind of kicked butt for the whole episode. So I thought it was a really strong episode.
Yeah, you make a good point there about knowing the character, because I'm going to give my brother-in-law Chris a shout out because he listens to the show. Last week we weirdly had a conversation when we both thought exactly the same thing about The Mandalorian, how he's a one-man A-team, which just made us both laugh. But the point being is that he's not familiar with Ahsoka.
Right,
yeah. And neither's Ruth, my wife. And she's heard of Ahsoka. She knows what Ahsoka looks like, but knows nothing else, really. She's not watched the animated shows. But it is a name that, like you just said, has floated around Star Wars fandom for well over a decade. So to bring in a character like Ahsoka, clearly for people like you and me and others, it's a monster moment. It's a huge moment. But I think the way the show worked so well was that I could almost step back from knowing who Ahsoka was and having the anticipation and just being introduced to that Jedi character that Bo-Katan mentioned. And again, Bo was the same. It's like you didn't have to know Bo-Katan from Rebels or Clone Wars. She was introduced perfectly well in that episode. And this was the same. It was almost like when you write a book and people go, "Now, don't assume everybody knows who Robbie is." You know what I mean? I'm picking this silly example. You've got to give the full name. And this feels like they've done everybody the justice of going, well, with that exposition as well, I don't think it's a particularly expositional show. Here's this Jedi character. You've travelled to this planet. You've met her. You've seen her do a thing. And then it kind of rolls on from there. They weren't expecting you to know who Ahsoka was. I don't feel they expected you to know. They gave you enough within the episode. You don't have to know her history. You don't have to know about seven seasons of the Clone Wars. You knew enough as a casual viewer of what this Jedi, even though we know she's not strictly speaking a Jedi, although maybe she is because a lot of water's gone under the bridge, we don't know. I thought that was really well handled.
For me, that one conversation that she has with the Mandalorian just after she kind of says, "I can't train him." And she gives her reasons as to why, because, like, you know, she's kind of seen what attachment can do to potential Jedis and Padawans and stuff in the past. And we know it's Vader, and we know she's referring to Anakin and stuff. I think a lot of people kind of got that, but she was kind of hinting towards that anyway, because, again, it's kind of like, it's kind of slightly assuming that, you know, you don't necessarily need to know Ahsoka, but you've probably seen the prequels. And that's fair enough, because to be fair, you know, you couldn't sit down and go, "Right, Din. So I was once a Padawan of Anakin Skywalker, and Anakin Skywalker turned into Darth Vader, Darth Vader, blah, 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 blah," because it's not how this series works.
No.
You know, I saw up and down mixed opinions actually on Ahsoka in this episode from various people. Some people were like, she's not a true representation of how she was in animation. And, you know, and I wasn't quite sure how Rosario Dawson kind of played it and stuff. You know, I mean, and obviously that's people's opinions, and some people will always kind of like want Ashley Eckstein to play Ahsoka in a live action.
Well, hey, before you say anything else, what are your thoughts on that? Because I've got thoughts on that. What do you think about it not being Ashley playing Ahsoka now?
Honestly, the thing that bugged me, and it was only a minor bug, was obviously her headtails, her montails, as they're referred to, were shorter than what we've seen them in Rebels.
That has actually been explained by the stunt team, yeah.
Precisely, I was going to say, so basically the stunt team kind of said that the longer montels weren't practical for live action, which makes sense. So they've kind of gone with that. But obviously at the time, I was like, that's a bit odd. It felt like they had gone for the Clone Wars kind of like aesthetic look of Ahsoka. But I thought her presence, as in Rosario's presence as Ahsoka, felt pretty natural in all these things, be it Clone Wars or be it Rebels or be it Mandalorian. We're taking a character, and that character has to fit into the aesthetic of the show. So the kind of aesthetic of the show is a fairly kind of like minimalistic, light dialogue scripting, whereby they don't tend to have these big, long conversations. It's not quite as light and bubbly as she was in the Clone Wars, or even necessarily I thought in Rebels. She kind of had a gravitas about her and a seriousness which kind of fitted the actual show. I kind of brought it. I just accepted it, really. I don't really have any kind of complaints at all. And like I said in the review that we put up on FanfarTracks, I thought her Shoto lightsabers looked amazing in HDR because they were so bright, and that those battle scenes were so gloomy. And the latter one, to me, felt almost like it was almost like an homage to Rebels, because it kind of had the same kind of lighting and kind of colour palette as Lothal did.
You're turning an animated character into a live action character. If you took Sabine, for example, who I would not at all be surprised if we saw Sabine at some point in either this season or next. I wouldn't necessarily expect her to be in bright pink, bright orange, bright purple sort of colours, like Bo-Katan's armour was clearly the modelling was the Night Owls and that stylistic look, but yeah. It was a bit battered and, like you say, a bit dialed back in brightness almost because it's not animated. So I think Sabine would have those colours, but they wouldn't be so in your face. With Ahsoka, again, from a practical point of view, it makes sense. You know, I'm sure they could have, if they wanted to, done CGI Montales if they wanted to. But then that's an extra expense and a different, you know, and to do all of that, it's maybe not easier, but just let's just adapt. I think they did a good job. And in relation to Ashley, and I've said it before, I think Ashley's amazing. I love what she does. She's such a beacon of, overused word, but positivity in the fandom, and much needed right now. But I still say that when she was hired in 2006 to be the voice of a 14-year-old Ahsoka Tano, she initially would have only been 14 to 17 as a character in age, the 3 years of the Clone Wars, that she came back and voiced her in Rebels. I think she herself has said she never automatically assumed that it would be her.
No,
much in
no.
the same way that Sam Witwer said, oh, I never always assume I'm going to be Maul, you know. So they're both quite in different characters, but both quite modest in that sense. But Ashley was hired as a voice actor. Ashley wasn't hired as a live action actor. And I think people have compared her to Katie Sackhoff. Well, that's not a fair comparison, because Katie was a star name coming into the show to voice a character, an actress who's done action type roles. Okay. Starbucks, not mega action, but you know what I'm getting at. It's not a fair comparison. So I do get why people feel like this about Ashley not voicing Ahsoka, but she tweeted, or rather Instagram this weekend, and Rosario replied to it. And there was a lovely little exchange between the two of them. So clearly no heat there. There's no reason at all why Ashley will not continue to be the voice of Ahsoka Tano in animated Star Wars television.
Ashley probably, I would think, would probably feel very touched that for fans are kind of like, oh, we want Ashley to do it. But like we said before, and we have talked about this before, I can't remember, or I don't necessarily know what the last thing that Ashley acted in. And was it something which was action orientated? Has she done kind of that kind of level of stuff? Or is it more like sitcom-y type comedy stuff? So
I would imagine when they made the decision to bring Ahsoka into live action and sat down and were honest, because they've got to knock out the best show they can. They can't.
Yeah,
to bring Ahsoka into live action, they've got to be confident they've done it right.
Exactly.
I would imagine after they'd made that decision, the first phone call would have been Dave on the phone to Ashley going, right, just so you know, we're doing a live action Ahsoka and we're picking whoever. Don't know how early they chose Rosario Dawson. Maybe she was in mind all the time. I don't know. I would imagine, just out of pure respect, and clearly they're beyond close as friends, that would have been a phone call I would imagine was made very early on.
Yeah.
Have you sensed any negativity from Ashley? Have you sensed any kickback from that? I haven't.
No, exactly. I mean, I suppose in some respects, there is that thing of like, Ashley got to be clever enough to kind of go, well, that's just it. Just because, like, I'm not doing the live action Ahsoka doesn't mean that I'm not going to get the next animated Ahsoka gig.
Yeah.
Because she is Ahsoka Tano. And it's almost that same way whereby the lines get blurred between Hayden Christensen and Matt Lanter.
Yes.
You know, and it's an interesting situation, because there are some people who are like, oh, yeah, Matt Lanter should be play Anakin if they do any more Anakin stuff.
So going back to the episode then, obviously we learn the name of the child stroke Baby Yoda stroke Grogu. And the connection between Ahsoka and Grogu now is clearly there. He has way more of a history than we ever assumed. He was around and in that prequels era, because obviously he's 50.
Mm-hmm.
We're told he's 50. He may be older. I don't know. That, I think for me, that threw that into some doubt.
Yeah.
What did you think of all of that? I mean, Mando's reaction to the connection between the two, when he realised that that kid was more than likely going to go, he was being the big guy. Yes, this is the right thing, but you could sense the sorrow. He doesn't really want to be a part anymore, does he?
When I heard Ahsoka say, oh, Grogu's his name, I wasn't too sure to begin with, but it kind of grew on me.
Very good.
Thank you. Sorry. Okay, that's throwing me right off.
Throwing you off.
For everything in one location. Daily news, reviews, interviews, podcasts, video and social media feeds. Bookmark FanthaTracks.com for Star Wars news 24/7, 365.
The name to me is just a name.
Yeah.
And I think actually thinking for a while, and I kind of had slightly hoped that Ahsoka would say, oh yeah, of course, it's so-and-so, it's Grogu, and know his name, because there does come a point where you think, well, hang on a sec, you know, we can't just keep on calling him the child, and also we can't keep on calling him informally Baby Yoda, because I think the longer we do, the harder it is for us to, you know, for people to kind of accept it, and, you know, there's,
we're only in season two as well, aren't we? We're still early days, really.
Well, yeah, exactly, you know, we're only kind of, like I said, like 13 episodes in, so the name's fine. It kind of felt okay. It didn't really kind of, I didn't go, wow, that's a cracking name. I mean, because to be honest, I wouldn't know what to call the bugger. If somebody said to me, what would you call the child if you had to name him? I'd be like, I have no idea. You know, so that little bit of backstory, just that little nugget that actually he's been trained.
Yeah.
And he's had to potentially hide some of his force abilities just to survive. And this is, again, I think, why the Baby Yoda moniker does him a disservice. Mm. It's because actually he's clearly not a baby.
No.
You know, I mean, I know there's a whole thing of like Yoda's lifespan, for instance, the equivalency, he is actually the age of a 2 or 3 year old. But let's kind of like, well, is it? I mean, I think we'll forget. Yoda said it himself, you know, judge me by your size, you don't. Mm. Because... And that is the key thing. So there's definitely got to be more going on behind those big dark eyes than I think he's either letting on, or that he's he maybe is actually aware of.
Yeah.
As such,
it feels like there's regressed memories there, isn't there? Or repressed memories, rather repressed. Memories.
Mm.
You know, that like you say, to protect himself, he's hidden his powers, but also to play into this helpless child role has kept him safe, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly, because that's just it, you know, and we saw it with Din right in chapter one, you know, it's very hard to blow a baby away, you know, or give him over to the Empire. I think it was really touching. I was genuinely hoping, and I kind of thought that, is Ahsoka going to actually take him away? And I was generally hoping that she wouldn't. What kind of makes a Mandalorian work and humanizes a Mandalorian is Grogu, because, you know, he is kind of the face that we don't see in the Mandalorian. Mm. So
it felt like, you say, it felt like she was going to take him for a point. And when I was watching it the first time, I was thinking, I wonder, would the show work without the two of them together?
Or that's it, isn't it? That's the question.
They are a team. We saw it last week when he was in the little tube, sort of trying to fix the wires together.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there's the connection there to this episode with the gear knob again, which was a great little moment using that as a, instead of the stone and such. So, and clearly his powers are far more advanced than probably he even realizes, because he is sort of holding it all back to protect. And again, we don't know what he knows, because we're sort of 9 years post A New Hope, which means we're 6 years post Return of the Jedi, which means Yoda's long gone. We don't know the status of what Luke's doing and Leia's doing with their training. Ahsoka's very reluctant to even want to get involved, because clearly we know, the viewer, if you don't know Ahsoka, maybe not so much, but we know she's referring back to Anakin and his fall. So she doesn't want the responsibility, but also she left the Jedi Order. So we don't know her status of all of that really at this point, particularly beyond what we know from the end of Rebels.
Yeah.
And is this before the end of Rebels, or is it after the end of Rebels? You know what I mean? It's that I'm a bit spotty on where we are in the timeline, because they've not really nailed that down.
Oh,
especially.
Are you referring to Ahsoka's quest?
Hmm.
That is a good question, isn't it? But last we saw Ahsoka at the end of Rebels, her and Sabine were going off to the unknown regions to track down Ezra.
Yeah.
So the question is, did she find Ezra? Did she abandon Sabine because they then learned that maybe Grand Admiral Thrawn was still alive? So therefore, maybe they said, you know what, let's split up. Sabine, you carry on tracking down Ezra. I'm going to go and tackle the Grand Admiral.
Mm-hmm.
And she then had to come back into the galaxy. Now that's on the table. And now that we know that Grand Admiral Thrawn is still alive, that just opens up a whole array of adventures for Ahsoka that we can now follow in some way, be it on TV or in an animation or cartoon or comic or book or all of the above.
So at the end, when Ahsoka's facing off with the Magistrate, they have their fight.
Yeah.
She mentions Grand Admiral Thrawn. Mm-hmm. Where's your master? Where's Grand Admiral Thrawn? Were you expecting that? Did you see that coming? I certainly didn't.
No.
I was out of my seat for that moment.
Yeah.
And where do you think it'll take us? Do you think it's another situation where in chapter one we saw Boba Fett, and we said back then when we talked about it on the show, not entirely sure we're going to see Boba Fett again this season. That could be it.
Yeah.
That could be you said it, bringing him back into the world. He's back on the table now as a character. Do you think this is a bit of the same?
I think so. I mean, and who knows what actually adventures lay before us in this series? So that's a big question. I guess it all kind of comes down to when we actually confront Moff Gideon next, but also how does Grand Admiral Thrawn kind of fold into, let's say, the Remnant Empire? Is he actually still kind of like associated with the Empire, or has he maybe gone back into the Chiss Ascendancy? Is he potentially going to be acting as like a unifier to kind of bring like Moff Gideon and other warlords and Moffs and Grand Admirals together to help solidify and create this new order, or this first order, or this final order, or what have you? He could play a part in it at some point. It's whether or not he needs to be visible now. And again, I suppose it comes down to, do we think that we're going to see Ahsoka again? I'm not necessarily sure that we need to see Ahsoka again, per se, unless, of course, there is a really big issue with Grogu, and I'm bloody determined to keep on using that instead of Baby Yoda from now on. I'm making that concerted effort.
Yes.
But that's the thing. It's like, could there be an instance, or when either Grogu does something or what have you, and Mandalorian's like, actually, now I'm totally out of my depth. I need some extra assistance here. Let me go and consult with Ahsoka. And then he goes off to find Ahsoka again. That could be something like that.
I mean, I've heard rumours floating around, and there's always rumours because it's Star Wars. And it wouldn't be Star Wars without rumours, so it's all good. But I keep hearing rumours of there being an Ahsoka show. And so this is the way of bringing Ahsoka in. We've heard numerous rumours of there being a Boba Fett show, or a miniseries at least, in a similar in nature, I would imagine, to the Obi-Wan project that we should be getting within the next couple of years. So it does fit, and it all goes back to what Bob Iger said about sort of having a Mando universe, that these characters would begin within this show. Mando would continue on his sort of littlest hobo journey with Grogu, and, you know, these characters would then spin off into their own thing.
The Mandalorian is exactly what they wanted. They wanted from a sequel trilogy. They wanted this way of kind of having a story that we're kind of slightly familiar with, which actually opens up the whole world. Like, let's call it the Disneyverse of Star Wars, shall we say. So there's not an over-reliance on the Skywalker saga era characters, but actually it's the Disney era creations that are now creating the future for the franchise. And I think that is what is happening here. And I think they're really clever in doing that, and they're really clever in how they're kind of pulling from the expanded universe and little bits and bobs here and there that are kind of familiar with the fans and are able to kind of drag into the canon, and therefore suddenly it just kind of enriches the current state of the galaxy. Like with the Dark Troopers. When was the last time you had a conversation about Dark Troopers before last week's episode?
Back in the 90s, probably.
Exactly. We see them and we go, oh my God, that's amazing. We at least know, as much as around at the time, in terms of like backstory to it, how much they then use is up to them. But then if we take, for instance, Grand Admiral Thrawn, you know, they were able to kind of incorporate his backstory in a very organic way into this new canon. So they can do whatever they want to do, and they seem to be doing it really well at this moment in time.
Yeah, it goes back to something Matt Martin said a while ago, when people were still sore about the old EU being parked to one side. And he said then, don't fret too much, because a heck of a lot of these characters will reappear. Yeah. We can now, in the best sense, we can now cherry pick from there. We can bring them into the new storylines in as organic a way as possible, and bring them in. I still wonder when Mando's going to turn up at Galaxy's Edge. That feels like that's got to happen, just for the brand synergy.
Yeah, exactly. You know? That feels like you kind of expect that. As a question for you, Mr. Stellar Cartographer, because I know you like maps and galaxy maps and all this nonsense. Near the end of the episode, we get that moment where Ahsoka sends Din on his next part of his quest, and that is to find Typhon, I should say, which is the historic home of the Jedi. I remember it from playing Star Wars The Old Republic, and that's actually where you started off if you chose a Jedi as your character. From what I understand, and from what I remember, that is in the Deep Core. Am I right? Is that where they're headed, into the Deep Core?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it is. It is in the Deep Core. It's just sort of slightly southeast of Coruscant. So if you're traveling through the galaxy, you'd head into Coruscant, you would head south. So Biss is a bit further southwest, but Typhon, basically, if you're looking at the galaxy map, bearing in mind that the galaxy map is sort of two-thirds to the right of what you would consider the center, because the unknown regions are still being mapped out. It is. It's smack in the middle. So I've been saying for ages I would love to have an episode where Mando goes to Coruscant. I want to see Mando on Coruscant. Well, if he's coming from where I think he's coming from, which is sort of, if you're looking at the galaxy map, sort of bottom right, really to get to Tython on any sort of logical route, and that sound you can hear is me clicking my mouse as I'm looking at the map. He's really got to come up. Yeah, he's got to come up the Corellian run, really. So to get there, my head tells me he will be going up to Coruscant and then heading down, because the way it always read to me, and I don't know whether it's ever been fully defined, I would imagine the Essential Atlas would be the place to look if there's any great detail. Getting into the deep core, it's the center of the galaxy, essentially. So it's much more difficult to navigate. Coruscant, you look on a Coruscant night, look up, the sky is just completely packed full of stars. So I would say it's a similar scenario. So to get to Tython, in my head, it would be a bit like trying to get to Acto or to get to Kamino. It kind of feels like it's not off the map. It's right there. It is as near to the center of the galaxy as you're reasonably going to get, but it wouldn't be easy. That will be fascinating if that's where we are going.
Yeah.
This is Steve Bloom, voice of Zebraelios, and you're listening to Fantha Trax Caravast. May the Force be with you.
Do you think that this is something that we're going to have now for at least for the rest of the season? Do you think that this is possibly one of those now bigger quest points whereby it's just going to take a long time to get there?
It should do. I mean, it really should do. I mean, I think one thing that I don't like about modern Star Wars is how they've shrunk the galaxy and that they give the impression that you could jump from Ilum to Tatooine in minutes. No. You know, hyperspace is difficult to traverse. You know, bounce too close to a star, through supernova, and all that malarkey that Solo says in A New Hope. Yeah, as the crow flies, it's probably quite easy to get from A to B. But in reality, there's spatial anomalies, there's black holes, there's gravity wells, all sorts of stuff that could pull you off course and throw you where you don't want to be, or into a star. I would imagine, yes, it feels like this is the big quest for the last few episodes, but he's got to get there. You know, the crest is fixed. She looks pretty much back up to spec. Whether or not she is, I don't know. We'll find out, I guess. But yeah, I would say that could be a real interesting journey, because I do think, you know, to get there, he has got to come pretty much straight through, you know, through the midrim, through the expansion, through the inner rim, through the colonies. He's got a lot of places to go and a lot of people are hunting for him. So he's going into some dangerous territory there. And also they mentioned also in the last episode, chapter 12, that Coruscant is not now the center of government. It's Chandrilla, you know, and that, I'm trying to remember where Chandrilla is.
If it's not on the map, it doesn't exist.
Oh. Yeah, good point. So I feel like he will go to Coruscant at some point. I really hope he does. And as chapter 12 mentioned, the school teacher droid mentioned, Chandrilla is now the home base of the New Republic, as it is, which is just along the Pelemian trade route from Coruscant. So it's in the core world. It's not far away at all. I think Stagecraft is going to take some stretching now. It's going to really have to do some work, because he's usually in townships. He's usually in villages and places like that. I think if you're heading into the interior, as Qui-Gon would say, and you're heading to places like Coruscant and places like Chandrilla, Tython, that will probably, to my mind, will feel a bit more like... I mean, you did see Tython in, I think it was issue 40 of Dr. Aphra. You saw it briefly, and it's very much sort of basically Himalayan temple sort of vibe.
It is, yeah. I mean, from playing The Old Republic, it's just a real nice kind of lush green kind of and mountainous kind of region anyway. So it's actually beautiful, but... I kind of get your point, because actually, yeah, I started to notice a couple of things actually with the Stagecraft, and I'm pretty sure this week when I was watching this episode, I could pick out where the Stagecraft volume was because on the very peripheral edge of the screen, you started to kind of get a bit of kind of like chromatic aberration where the picture was kind of starting to kind of like bend round a little bit. It didn't have that with like some very clearly kind of like foreground live action elements. It just seemed to be in the background a little bit. I mean, if you look at the towns that we've actually seen in this season so far, they're kind of pretty similar. I'm thinking of like the mining town in Tatooine was kind of like one of those long kind of like
one horse town.
Yeah, pretty much. And this was pretty much the same kind of thing, other than you had that kind of, I guess you'd say that'd be like government building in the center where Ahsoka and the Magistrate have their wicked battle and stuff. But it kind of felt very similar. But I kind of think actually for this week's episode, that storyline, the whole kind of the Magistrate and the freeing of the repressed township and the villages and stuff, was just kind of a backdrop, just to kind of like have a reason for Ahsoka to be there. And I don't really think it was at all consequential. It was kind of like the least important part of the episode as far as I was concerned. So it was more of a chance just to get Ahsoka to meet with the Mandalorian and so they can have these moments with Grogu.
Hi, this is Vanessa Marshall, and you're listening to FanthaTrax.
So if this casting is moving forward on the Obi-Wan Kenobi miniseries, it starts shooting in March 2021 under Deborah Chow, who we know from The Mandalorian, and rumours have it landing in 2022 on Disney+. But three supporting roles and a lead actress role have, rumour has it, been bobbling around. So head to FanthaTrax for the link, and it's in the show notes as well. So the lead, co-lead, is Riley, a.k.a. Eve. They always have placeholder names for these things. A female, 20 to 25. A female BIPOC, whose character details have been kept under wraps. The supporting characters, Tia, female, in her 30s, supporting, similar, BIPOC. Harold, male, late 20s, early 30s, I would say, supporting, quirky, comedic male, so you've got your comedy relief there. And Bella, a female in her 40s, supporting Latinx. So you've got a good mixture of people there, kind of characters that you're going to throw into the Kenobi verse. What do you think? There's three actresses, Thuso Mabidu, Anula Nav Lekar, and Naomi Scott, all up for the lead role of Riley. Any thoughts on who this character might be? And it's complete hypothesis because we know nothing about this show.
I have absolutely no idea. And it's really difficult because it doesn't really give you much in the way of character attributes other than like the physical aspect, you know, the black indigenous person of colour identify in the casting criteria. So it, yeah, completely no massive idea. I wonder perhaps if Bella, because she's the older one, I wonder if there could be more of a matriarch type character there or something perhaps, and we've got like younger siblings in Riley and Harold and Tia perhaps. I'm guessing then that Riley's going to be the main character who's going to kind of come into contact with Obi-Wan first and possibly be the one who discovers he's a Jedi. But who knows? I mean, it's nice that we've got this description, but it's very difficult, isn't it? Because like, it's not even like the actual character names have been nailed down at this point.
That's true, yeah. I mean, as I put in the article on the site, it's too early to really say. We've got no idea. We don't know really, other than roughly being sort of midpoint between A New Hope and Revenge of the Sith. We don't really know much else about the scenario, other than we assume it will be set on Tatooine for the most part. But also, if there is any meat on the bone to the rumours that Hayden Christensen will be in the show, so you will be seeing Clone Wars era flashbacks, any of these characters could have been with Obi-Wan and Anakin in that time frame. It's not necessarily now, inverted commas, that these characters are existing. It could be in the past. So who knows? I mean, again, you know, when Yoda dies in Return of the Jedi and basically says to Luke, the last of the Jedi you will be, and we kind of know how that wasn't really the case. Lucasfilm have been very clever in sort of fudging the facts, but sort of putting reasons why these phrases still hold water but aren't necessarily 100% accurate anymore. Because when we were kids, it was like there was Obi-Wan, there was Yoda, there was Luke, there was Vader, and the Emperor, and nobody else really used the Force. They were the only ones left doing it. Now we know that's not the case. So be interesting to see how this pans out. There was also another rumour that came out regarding The Mandalorian and some later episodes in Season 2. An interview with James Arnold Taylor on Rebel Force Radio was released where James revealed that he was on set and saw Ming-Na Wen and Gina Carano together on set filming stuff. That was later trimmed and the episode re-released, but of course it's the internet, so once it's out there, it's out there. Screenshots of everything. What do you think about that? Do you think that makes some sense with Fennec Shand coming back, doesn't it? Given what we saw at the end of season of chapter 5 as well.
Yeah, it makes sense that she's coming back. I never thought that was the end. The question is obviously still who actually approached her, or shall we say rescued her at the end of chapter 5. And it'll be interesting to see then, is this another episode set on Tatooine? And if not, is it set in Nevarro? Or has Cara Dune now moved off of Nevarro? And is this where she starts to maybe make her decision to join the New Republic and help out the wider community? What about you? No real surprises that she's coming back, do you think?
No, I mean, it was left, you know, why would you show her body and somebody standing next to her if that was it? She was dead and she wasn't coming back, and you were never going to reveal who that person's feet were. It was such an obvious tease when people were freaking out that how can you bring an actress like Ming-Na Wen in and then kill her off? It's like, of course they've not killed her off. Why would they show that? It was so obvious that she was going to come back. So, but how she's coming back, and again, it's on the site. It's all rumours. So, yeah, you know, if you want to avoid rumours, don't listen to this. Yeah, going back to Tatooine is not a problem for me because I love being on that place, but I do want to see more of the galaxy. And like we've just said about Tython, it feels like he's on course for a large or a big journey getting there. But this would be an interesting way, if this is right near the end of the season, which it kind of feels like it will be. Well, it's got to be. We're only 3 episodes to go. It'd be great to see her back because her character was implacable, just really cool, and got caught out by Toro Calican, probably having the finest moment of his short-lived career.
Yes.
But, you know, if it is Fett that was the one that found her and brought her back, because everybody said how that did look like his boots, and I would need to go back and look at Cobb Vanth and see what footwear he was wearing, because maybe he wasn't wearing the Mando, the Fett boots. Maybe he was wearing something else.
I'm pretty sure I did look at that, and I'm pretty sure I even took that footage into my baselight suite at work just to see if I could lift it up, and the feet were so buried in the grade, so dark that you couldn't actually see anything. I think it was more the sound design that kind of gave people that kind of hint, because they had that kind of Boba Fett sound design.
Yeah.
And I don't think Cobb Vanth did have the same kind of boots, because Boba's boots are kind of, they're square at the front and they're angled. They're scuba diving boots, and they're just, they're comfy to wear, but they look a bit odd. Yeah, I think Cobb just wore normal boots. It's fairly utilitarian, nondescript boots, really. That's my take anyway.
I like your take on footwear in the Star Wars galaxy. It's very good. Always welcome. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Like I say, we're only 3 episodes from the end, but the time we all reconvene for episode 66 of Making Tracks, we'll only have 2 episodes to go. So we're really at the sharp end now, and Christmas is coming. Good grief. What's going on?
Oh, tell me about it. Okay, so episode 65 done and dusted, and we're going to close it as quick as a blast door. But if you've got a question, or if you have any comments or thoughts or opinions about anything we talked about, or just anything to do with Star Wars in general, you can get in touch with us, and Mark is going to tell you how you can do it.
I am. If you want to be part of the action and stay updated on all the latest Star Wars news, visit FanthaTracks.com or check out the free FanthaTracks app through the App Store to follow us on your mobile device. No excuse. It takes as long as it takes to download, and then it's yours forever and it costs you nothing. You can reach out to us and send in your listeners' questions by emailing radio@FanthaTracks.com. Please, we've got a couple of questions in the bag. We would have done one this week, but of course, circumstances have overtaken us somewhat, so we will get to that next week. Comment, like, and share on any of our social media feeds at FanthaTracks, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, please. Some 5-star ones would be lovely with Christmas coming, on Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or your podcatcher or smart speaker of choice. And as always, thanks to James Semple for composing the FanthaTracks intro, and you heard James on this week's episode of Fantha Down Under, so go and listen to that. Adam O'Brien for our Making Tracks only music, and Mark Daniel and Vanessa Marshall for our voiceovers. And be sure to watch Good Morning Tatooine, our weekly news show, live on FanthaTracks Facebook every Sunday evening at 9 o'clock UK time, and later on FanthaTracks TV on YouTube. There you go. I did it all in one breath, and I'm going to go and lie down now.
Well done. Excellent. Everybody else, you stay frosty, and we'll see you at the next episode.
Coming up next on FanthaTracks Radio, it's Cannon Fodder.
Stay frosty, I love that phrase. Love it.